John Fay is the former WADA president, and he joins us. John, thanks very much for your time.
Good morning.
Were you confident, John, that the Court of Arbitration for Sport would bring down this finding?
Look, I had no view either way. I didn't know the facts or the evidence. My term expired in the end of 2013. This case, of course, started long before then. But to the point that there was evidence available, that evidence was now considered in the Court of Arbitration for Sport by a very experienced panel in anti-doping matters. And they clearly have found from the judgment I've been reading this morning to their comfortable satisfaction that there was an offence committed, an anti-doping rule violation, and therefore sanctions had to be imposed.
Therefore, John, you're not surprised with the length of the sanction then?
Look, I think they've done reasonably well on penalty. The fact that the tribunal has looked at the time that it's taken and given a lot of concession to the players on the basis that it wasn't their fault, it meant that they were prepared in the circumstances to backdate a two-year sanction commencing on the 31st of March last year, therefore expiring in 2017, and then give some further concessions to the players on the basis of voluntary suspensions, which is effectively during the off-seasons. So in that context, they missed 2016. They could well have started a two-year term today, meaning that there would have been no football in 2017 either. So the penalty effectively comes to 1 year versus the two, even though it is stated as a two-year penalty, backdated though to last year.
John, give us a bit of history here. How often does the things go all the way to WADA and a penalty like this is handed down?
Oh, look, it's quite a regular thing. There's about 2,000 cases a year. Perhaps none as complicated or as extensive as this. This has been the most unusual case I've seen in my 6 years as the world president and in anything I've been party to in terms of reading or being informed of. It's unusual because it was announced at the very beginning that there was a problem, and then the Australian Sports Anti-Doping Authority was told to go and collect evidence. So the whole world knew about it while evidence was being collected. Most times there's a hearing and a decision, and that's the first time you hear about it. All the work that leads up to such a decision is done privately, it's done in confidence, and it's the decision that you get first notice of. Here we've watched this whole thing unfold. There's been any amount of court cases involving players seeking to set aside in the federal court any inquiry, any infraction notice that was proposed to be issued by ASADA, appeals on that to the federal court, an AFL tribunal, a decision there, appeal subsequently again by WADA to the Court of Arbitration for Sport. So it's been a long, drawn-out process. And that's another reason the Court of Arbitration for Sport gave. It said there's been a significant amount of pressure on these players over this past three-year period, much of which was not their fault because of the nature in which this matter was dealt with by others, including delays occasioned by court hearings.
John, one last one. We know you have to go, but WADA and I suppose ASADA is set up primarily for individual sports, individuals. Do you think that the rules written at the moment adequately cover team sports?
Of course they do. Look, that is a fallacy. And if I could say, this code now has been reviewed worldwide on two separate occasions. The last time at the end of my term in 2013, which took effect again in 2015. Today, the penalty starts at 4 years, so the AFL players can probably say, well, we're at least a little lucky we were under the old sanctions, not the new ones. Time and again, this particular argument's been put up. It's for individuals. The simple fact is it's not. It covers team sports. What it does say, and it's always been this way, is that there is a strict liability for every player, every athlete. You do not put anything into your system that may be a benefit to you in the context of being on the prohibited list, a performance enhancer. If you do, you're immediately at fault. No point talking about the coach told me, or mum and dad told me, or that the doctor told me even. You might get some concessions for that in terms of penalty, but the liability is yours and yours alone. Now, I think what we've got to get out of all of this is far greater education of players. If I could indicate, I spent time with the head of one of our AFL clubs last year. He voluntarily sought me out and said, can I spend a couple of hours with you and understand how the anti-doping code works? If you've got the head of one of our AFL clubs asking that question, you have to say to yourself, what education have the AFL players been given, or for that matter, the NRL players or the Football Australia players, any of them, have they got enough? The one that does it well, in my view, is the Australian Olympic Committee. They will educate all people selected to represent Australia in a manner where none of them could say, I didn't really know what I was doing.
You say the head of a head
to say they don't know what they were doing. They may well be right, but what's the system that allows that sort of a statement to be made? It shouldn't exist.
You said the head of an AFL club sought you out to understand the code. Are you talking about a CEO, a coach, or a president?
A CEO.
Okay, John.
I'm not going to name that CEO.
Yeah, that's fine.
But, I'm always willing if my knowledge can assist anyone to provide that information to them. But it was a timely reminder that perhaps our AFL players, and for that matter, many other codes, the players are not educated enough as to what the consequences of trying to get an advantage might be.
John, thanks.
We all know in this case there was a wish to get an advantage because they signed declarations so they wouldn't tell anybody before they got their needles.
John, thanks very much for your time again.
My pleasure.